She smiled more broadly and inclined her head once. The door opened, and Murphy and Kincaid arrived. Kincaid was moving under his own power, though very gingerly, and with the aid of a walking stick. I got out of the way, and he came over to settle down next to Ivy. She woke up enough to murmur something about cookies and a Happy Meal. He settled down on the bed beside her, and she pressed up against his arm before settling down to rest again. Kincaid, evidently exhausted himself, drew a gun, took the safety off, placed it on his chest, and went to sleep too. "It's cute," I whispered to Murphy. "He has a Teddy Glock." She was looking at Kincaid and Ivy with a decidedly odd expression. She shook her head a little, blinked up at me, and said, very funny. I had your car dug out of the snow, by the way." I blinked at her. "Thank you. Got your keys?" "Yeah. Give you a ride to it," she said. "Groovy." We took off. Once we were in the car and moving, Murphy said, "I like Lucio." "Yeah? But she's all wrong for you." "Uh-huh," I said. "You come from different worlds, and she's your boss. There are secrets you have to keep from her. That's going to make things difficult. And there are other issues that could come up." "Wait," I said. I mimed cleaning out my ears. "Okay, go ahead. Because for a second there, it sounded like you were giving me relationship advice." Murphy gave me a narrow, oblique look. "No offense, Dresden, but if you want to compare total hours of good relationships and bad, I leave you in the dust in both categories." "Touché," I said, sourly. Kincaid was looking awfully paternal in there, wasn't he? "Oh, bite me," Murphy said, scowling. "How's Michael?" "Gonna make it," I said. "Hurt bad, though. Don't know how mobile he's gonna be after this." Murphy fretted her lower lip. "What happens if he can't keep on with the night business?" I shook my head. "I have no idea. I didn't think that taking up one of the swords was the sort of job offer you could turn down." I blinked at Murphy. "No, Murph. There's no mandatory martyrdom involved. You've got a choice. You've always got a choice. That's sort of the whole point of faith, the way I understand it." She digested that in silence for a time. Then she said, "It isn't because I don't believe." "I know that," I said. She nodded. "It isn't for me, though, Harry. I've already chosen my ground. I've taken an oath. It meant more to me than accepting a job." "I know," I said. "If you weren't the way you are, Murph, the sword of faith wouldn't have reacted to you as strongly as it did. If someone as thick as me understands it, I figure the Almighty probably gets it too." She snorted and gave me a faint smile and drove the rest of the way to my car in silence. When we got there, she parked next to the Blue Beetle. "Harry," she said, "do you ever feel like we're going to wind up old and alone? That we're, I don't know, doomed never to have anyone, anything that lasts?" I flexed the fingers of my still scarred left hand and my mildly tingling right hand. "I'm more worried about all the things I'll never be rid of." I eyed her. "What brings on this cheerful topic?" She gave me a faint smile. "It's just the center cannot hold, Harry. I think things are starting to fall apart. I can't see it and I can't prove it, but I know it." She shook her head. "Maybe I'm just losing my mind." I looked intently at her, frowning. "No, Murph, you aren't. There are bad things happening," she said. "Yeah, and I haven't been able to put many pieces together yet, but we shut down some of the bad guys last night. They were using the Denarians to get to the archive." "What do they want?" "Don't know," I said, "but it's going to be big and bad." "I want in on this fight, Harry," she said. "Okay, all the way. Promise me." "Done," I offered her my hand. She took it